The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Every Sunday, Face the Nation brings you in-depth interviews with the biggest names in Washington.
Kellyanne Conway, Nancy Pelosi, Lindsey Graham, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
You'll never miss an episode with the weekly podcast from CBS News Radio. Tune in to hear moderator Margaret Brennan and the country's top policymakers discuss today's toughest issues.
What is going on? Is this political conspiracy or is this just incompetence?
The Face the Nation podcast. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The U.S. blames Iran for attacks on two ships.
Both were carrying oil products when they were rocked by explosions.
Plus, a key White House figure plots her exit.
Press Secretary Sarah Sanders is leaving the administration at the end of the month.
And later, the Prime Minister of Georgia on Russian troops occupying part of his country.
This is the most painful challenge for us.
And now, from the Capital One Bank studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with Iran. A new video appears to show members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard removing an unexploded mine from one of the oil tankers attacked in the Gulf of Oman, according to Trump administration officials. Iran denies any involvement. More from correspondent Laura Podesta.
The White House is pointing a finger at Iran after a pair of oil tankers were attacked in the Gulf of Oman. Both were carrying oil products when they were rocked by explosions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo blamed Iranian mines.
This assessment is based on intelligence, the weapons used, the level of expertise needed to execute the operation, recent similar Iranian attacks on shipping, and the fact that no proxy group operating in the area has the resources and proficiency to act with such a high degree of sophistication.
The attacks happened as Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe met with Iranian leaders in Tehran.
Prime Minister Abe made a historic trip to Iran to ask the regime to de-escalate and enter into talks. Iran's supreme leader rejected Prime Minister Abe's diplomacy by saying he has no response to President Trump and will not answer.
Iran's UN mission issued a statement denying any involvement in the attacks, calling the accusation, quote, Iranophobic. Laura Podesta, CBS News.
Meanwhile, on Wednesday, there were suspicions by Democrats in Congress that the White House is using Iran to try and justify an arms sale to the country's enemy, Saudi Arabia.
Many lawmakers are angry the Trump administration cited a threat from Iran and declared an emergency to push through arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Elliot Engel is chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
There is no emergency. It's phony. It's made up. And it's an abuse of the law.
A State Department official insisted the threat was real. Congressman Brad Sherman.
The arms sales you're talking about are controversial. There's significant opposition in Congress. And rather than confront that, you go around it.
Cammie McCormick, CBS News, The Pentagon.
The president is trying to walk back comments he made to ABC's George Stephanopoulos that he'd accept dirt on political opponents turned over from foreign powers. It comes as Congress issues new subpoenas in the Russia probe, and days after Donald Trump Jr. testified again behind closed doors to the Senate Intelligence Committee.
I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening.
President Trump said he would not refuse dirt on a political rival if another country offered it, even though it is a crime for a campaign to knowingly accept anything valuable from a foreign government.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong.
FBI Director Christopher Wray has said the right thing to do in every case is to report it.
And then that's something that the FBI would want to know about.
The FBI director is wrong.
The controversy is unfolding as Congress continues to investigate Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign.
There was an assault on our democracy.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the president is inviting foreign governments to play a role in our elections.
The president gave us once again evidence that he does not know right from wrong. It's a very sad thing.
Even Republicans are struggling to defend Mr. Trump. Senator Lindsey Graham, a faithful ally, called him out.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake of law. I don't want to send a signal to encourage this. Other Republicans quickly pointed out Democratic support in 2016 for the now infamous dossier that contained sensational and unverified claims about President Trump's ties to Russia, written by a British ex-spy. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, The White House.
The House Oversight Committee voted Wednesday to hold two top Trump administration officials in contempt of Congress.
The Democratic-controlled committee voted 24-15 to advance contempt measures against Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross.
For defying duly authorized subpoenas from this committee and refusing to produce documents required by those subpoenas relating to the 2020 census.
Committee Chair Elijah Cummings believes the citizenship question was to help officials gerrymander legislative districts in partisan fashion. The vote sends the measure to the full House. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders will depart the Trump administration soon as a federal ethics watchdog calls on the dismissal of one of the president's closest aides.
President Trump tweeted the news that his press secretary Sarah Sanders is leaving the administration at the end of the month. At a White House event, the president praised Sanders' work and said she will return to her home state of Arkansas.
She's done an incredible job. We've been through a lot together, and she's tough, but she's good.
Sanders, who has worked for the Trump presidential campaign, took the high-profile press secretary job in 2017 after Sean Spicer stepped down.
I couldn't be prouder to have had the opportunity to serve my country and particularly to work for this president.
After President Trump called some news media the enemy of the people, Sanders refused to say if she agreed with him or not.
I'm here to speak on behalf of the president. He's made his comments clear.
Regular White House press briefings came to a halt during Sanders' tenure. There has not been one for more than 90 days.
Sanders told reporters she doesn't regret not holding more briefings. She said she's leaving to spend more time with her kids and wouldn't rule out a political career in the future.
Her departure comes as the U.S. Office of Special Counsel is recommending President Trump fire another key aide, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway. The watchdog agency says Conway repeatedly violated the Hatch Act, limiting government employees' political activity by disparaging Democratic presidential candidates on TV and social media.
The only difference between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump is Bernie Sanders' ideas are terrible for America.
The White House says the actions against Conway violate her rights to free speech. Nicole Killian, CBS News, The White House.
The president says he won't fire Conway. Reality star turned criminal justice reform advocate Kim Kardashian West returned to the White House on Thursday to help President Trump promote efforts to help those leaving prison get jobs.
Kim Kardashian wants to help former inmates move about freely. The reality TV star was back at the White House promoting the hiring of prisoners released early under the First Step Act, the criminal justice reform law President Trump signed into law in December.
We have a rideshare partnership where formerly incarcerated people will be gifted gift cards so that they can get rides to and from job interviews, to and from jobs.
She says the goal is all about a second chance. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Coming up, Georgia's prime minister on Russian aggression.
But Russia, unfortunately, continues to undermine all our peaceful initiatives.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Meeting with the president of Poland at the White House, President Trump said he may send additional U.S. troops to that formerly communist country as a check on Russian aggression.
The president says he's prepared to move additional U.S. forces into Poland.
They're talking about 2,000 troops. But we'd be taking them out of Germany or we'd be moving them from another location. It would be no additional troops to Europe.
As a check on Russia, Poland's president has urged the U.S. to build a permanent base for American troops in his country. Last year, he said he'd name it Fort Trump. The president told reporters,
"That's all I need, Fort Trump. You people would have a field day with that, right?"
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, The White House.
Another country concerned about Russian aggression is Georgia. Georgian Prime Minister Mamukha Bakhtadze joins us in studio here in the Washington Bureau after meeting with several Trump administration officials, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, National Security Advisor John Bolton, and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. Mr. Prime Minister, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me here today.
Should the U.S. rebuild its relationship with Russia and Vladimir Putin?
Well, unfortunately, Russia continues to occupy 20% of our territory. This is the most painful challenge for us. Russia continuously undermines the rule-based international system, and that's a threat for everybody.
Are you worried when you hear about reports, especially over the last few days, about a buildup of Russian troops in Crimea and how that could possibly play out in your own country?
Well, of course, that's a threat. And the message that we've been trying to convey for many, many years, that without ensuring the sustainable security in the Black Sea region, there is no way that transatlantic community can be secured due to the geographical reasons.
Should and can President Trump trust Vladimir Putin?
Well, now when it comes to the trust or no trust, so it's an international politics. Russia continues to violate and undermine the rule-based international system. And everybody understands that. If Russia continues to undermine the international rule-based system like it's doing now and is doing for years, for the last several years, then it will create additional threats for Europe, for transatlantic community, for the nations who believe in freedom, and for nations who believe in a rule-based international system.
So Russia is clearly a threat to regional stability, regional security, especially in regards to Georgia. But how can the Trump administration engage with Vladimir Putin and the Russian government?
Well, it's about principles and values, and the at the same time also building a strategic relations with the countries who made this civilizational choice to become the members of NATO.
You're clearly concerned about Russia. How come you haven't had stronger words for Russia and its leader, Vladimir Putin, who's ordered Russian troops to occupy 20% of your country? It sounds like you're stopping short of saying that the United States should take stronger action outside of NATO with its relationship with Vladimir Putin.
Well, we are using all our international platforms to convey this message, whether it's UN, whether these are our partners in NATO or within European Union. And there are international sanctions on Russia.
Right.
And international community should continue to be very principled when it comes to that. And once again, let me repeat myself. It's not only because this is a problem and challenge for Georgia. This is a challenge for everybody who believes in rule-based international system as a foundation for the strong democracies and for the freedom. But Russia, unfortunately, continues to undermine all our peaceful initiatives.
On NATO, you've talked about how your country is meeting defense spending standards set by NATO. You're not a part of NATO yet. How close do you think your country is to joining NATO?
Well, Georgia actually is meeting all the criteria. And 11 years ago, the NATO made the decision, and in the last summit in Brussels, it was once again reiterated that Georgia has all the practical tools and would eventually become a member of NATO. We also understand that this path will be full of challenges, but at the same time, we believe that our friends and the United States will help us. We do hope that this process will happen as soon as it's possible. So once the decision is matured, Georgia is ready to join the NATO.
Do you think Georgia's membership in NATO could trigger a response from Russia?
No, and I will explain my words because the idea of NATO, that it is the organization which is a group of countries who believe in democracy and in freedom. So therefore, Russia shouldn't have the right to veto our civilizational choice to become a member of NATO.
I also want to ask you about Georgia's economic ties with the U.S. You've been on a cross-country road trip, meeting with companies here. You want a U.S.-Georgia trade deal. What indications have you gotten from the White House that's likely?
We are strategic partners, and we are trying to take the strategic partnership to another level. And we have extraordinary a achievement when it comes to the security dimension. And now it's time for the economy to catch up. The United States has been standing next to us since our independence during the toughest time in our recent history. And we made a significant and phenomenal transformation of our country. More than 200 American companies are currently working in Georgia. And we started the roadshow, of course, with this focus to increase the visibility about the economic potential in Georgia.
I can tell you're optimistic about the trade relationship. I can tell you're trying to stay on message about the benefits of economic relations with Georgia. But have you gotten any promises from the Trump administration about a trade deal?
So, as you may know, 2 weeks ago, the Foreign Relations Committee initiated a new bill, which actually indicates that it will be a very strong signal to the rest of the world. It will be a strong signal that United States actually rewards its allies and the FTA is regarded. So considered as a way to proceed, and of course we believe that should be a next logical step. We are very actively working on it, and I do hope that eventually it will happen.
Georgian Prime Minister Mamuka Bakhtadze joining us in Washington. Have a safe trip home.
Thank you.
Up next, arrests in the shooting of former Red Sox player David Ortiz.
Dominican police held up the suspected weapon used to shoot David Ortiz in the back.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Listen to the news right now in your car with the CBS News Radio app. Just download the free app to your iOS or Android device to stream the news that you need on Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. If you find yourself stuck in traffic, listen to your favorite shows like CBS This Morning, Face the Nation, CBS Evening News, or World News Roundup. The CBS News Radio app. Download it on your phone now to use in Apple CarPlay or Android Auto today.
From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Developments in the investigation into the attack on former Red Sox player David Ortiz in the Dominican Republic.
After announcing new arrests during a press conference Wednesday, Dominican police held up the suspected weapon used to shoot David Ortiz in the back. They say the gun was discovered Tuesday, buried under a house in the city of Mao, more than 100 miles from the shooting scene in Santo Domingo. Several of the 10 total suspects were also arrested in Mao. No one associated with the crime will be immune from punishment, the DR's chief prosecutor said, adding, "We recognize the symbolism that David Ortiz represents and the commitment that we have for this case to be brought to light in its entirety." A cell phone recovered from the shooting scene led police to the alleged gunman, 25-year-old Rolfi Ferreira Cruz, but they say he had plenty of help. New surveillance video shows a meeting between the suspects in two cars and the accused motorcycle driver, Eddie Garcia, near the bar before the ambush. The video then appears to show that motorcycle heading toward the bar. Minutes later, you can see the gunman walk up to Ortiz and open fire. Dominican authorities have not said which suspect in custody planned the attack, but they do say the group was offered 400,000 Dominican pesos, roughly 7,800 U.S. dollars, to carry it out. And as Ortiz recovers in Boston, police in the DR say they won't rest until the suspects are caught. For us, all Dominicans are important, he said. We will give him the same treatment as a normal criminal investigation.
One of the suspects is already facing charges back in the U.S. He has allegedly been on the run since December of 2017 for a string of robberies in New Jersey. Mola Legge, CBS News, Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic.
Actor Cuba Gooding Jr. was arrested Thursday, accused of groping a woman. Here's correspondent Jerika Duncan.
The actor walked into a New York City police precinct where he was later fingerprinted, photographed, handcuffed, and charged with a crime.
I have never seen a case like this one because there is not a scintilla of criminal culpability that can be attributed to Mr. Cuba Gooding Jr.
TMZ obtained video of what appears to be 51-year-old Gooding touching the alleged victim at a New York City club Sunday night.
Do you maintain that you didn't do anything wrong?
Yes.
Do you have anything to say, Mr. Gooding? What do you say about the video?
Watch it.
The actor has long been dogged by accusations of bad behavior. His lawyer disputed another allegation from a second woman who says Gooding groped her in 2008. The actor's Hollywood career started with the 1991 movie Boys in the Hood. And he won an Academy Award for his role in the 1996 film Jerry Maguire.
Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
The Hollywood star now wants to spotlight the entire surveillance video from the club to show what he calls the truth. Gooding was charged with forcible touching, a misdemeanor. His attorney calls this case overzealous policing. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
American Amanda Knox returned to Italy for the first time after being wrongly convicted of murdering her college roommate. More from CBS News correspondent Seth Doan.
Amanda Knox landed in Italy and right back into the media frenzy that trailed her through her murder trial, conviction, and release. She's here for a criminal justice conference hosted by the Italy Innocence Project, part of a global network working to free those wrongly convicted. Knox was released from an Italian prison in 2011 after serving 4 years for the murder and sexual assault of her college roommate, Meredith Kircher. An appeals court overturned her guilty verdict, but after she left Italy, Knox was found guilty again in absentia in a third trial, until finally Italy's Supreme Court exonerated her in 2015. Earlier this week, she posted a photo with the caption, "Feeling Frayed," and in an essay railed against the mistakes of the Italian judicial system and an irresponsible media, which she writes profited for years by sensationalizing an already sensational and utterly unjustified story.
The court of public opinion has a tremendous effect on the real courts.
Justin Brooks is the director of the California Innocence Project.
I think it is very, very brave of Amanda to come back here. I think it's important that she's here because for an entire country, she was the biggest case of someone being convicted, and now she's the biggest case of someone being exonerated.
But not everyone is so welcoming here. We've spoken with the lawyer for Meredith Kircher's family, who told us Knox's return to Italy is inappropriate and reopens old wounds. Seth Doan, CBS News. Modena, Italy.
The NTSB is investigating how a chopper crashed onto a Manhattan skyscraper Monday.
A post-crash fire consumed much of the wreckage.
The questions yet to be answered. Why pilot Tim McCormick took off from the 34th Street heliport in poor weather conditions without being certified to do so. Why he flew into airspace over the city that has been restricted since Donald Trump became a presidential candidate. And did he decide to attempt a rooftop landing rather than put the thousands of people on the streets below at risk? His brother Michael believes he did. Tim put other people's lives first, he said in a statement. By putting the helicopter on the roof of a building, which took great skill, it is a true act of heroism.
The how and why of this accident will be challenging to determine. Helicopters typically don't have black boxes, and the NTSB is trying to determine if the pilot said anything over the radio before the crash. Don Daler, CBS News, New York.
All charges have been abruptly dropped against the state officials accused of poisoning Flint's water supply with lead. WWJ reporter Sandra McNeil explains why.
Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel was basically saying that due to failures in the early investigation, there isn't enough evidence to bring charges in the case. Former Health Director Nick Lyon was accused of manslaughter for a dozen Legionnaires' deaths following the switch to water from the Flint River. Lyon's attorney, John Birch, says the case has been crushing on his client.
You know, to be charged based on such faulty theories and non-existent evidence, you know, to be called basically a murderer, that's what a manslaughter charge is.
Nessel says she will continue to investigate the Legionnaires' deaths. Sandra McNeil for CBS News, Detroit.
New concerns about something else in water.
Nitrates occur naturally and they're found in
manure and sort of waste runoff.
In other words, fertilizer that seeps into drinking water from mostly large industrial farms. The Environmental Working Group study links these nitrates to more than 12,500 cancer cases. EWG toxicologist Alexis Temkin.
For instance, colorectal cancer cases were about, at maximum, 8% of the total colorectal cancer cases in the U.S.
Temkin says the highest cases per capita were found in agricultural areas of Delaware, Arizona, California, and Iowa. Peter King, CBS News.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, the future of Sudan.
Protesters have been pushing for more democracy. They want more representation in whatever government takes over.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
On Wednesday, police clashed with protesters on the streets of Hong Kong, where demonstrators are taking a stand against Beijing.
We have to use force, said Hong Kong's police chief, and they did. They shot tear gas and pepper spray, swung batons, and fired rubber bullets. Protesters pushed back with water bottles, protected by umbrellas and masks. Everyone was a target, including us.
Oh! Already, the smoke and the tear gas is making its way here. Feeling it inside your nose, into your eyes, is getting closer and closer.
Drink some water to flush it out.
Okay, thank you.
But it's a small kind of sting when your future's at stake.
I think there's no hope, but we still need to continue to fight against the big Beijing government and protect our city and our future.
The hope to stop lawmakers from passing a controversial extradition bill. The fear, if passed, anyone here could be extradited to mainland China. Human rights lawyer Jason Ng says that could include foreigners.
If I'm an American and I did something bad here, I could potentially be extradited to China.
Well, you don't even have to do anything bad. What is to stop China from making up evidence?
Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, who's appointed by Beijing, said she hasn't sold out Hong Kong. But in a separate speech, condemned the protesters as rioters.
That designation means protesters may be subject to very long prison terms if arrested, but that's a risk many are willing to take as we get closer to the bill's passage. Chief Executive Carrie Lam says she hopes to do that by next week. Raimi Innocencio, CBS News, Hong Kong.
A U.S. report says North Korea is violating sanctions by exceeding oil import limits. CBS News Foreign Affairs analyst Pamela Falk is at the United Nations with more.
The context of the new North Korea report by the U.S. is a stalemate in negotiations between U.S. and North Korea since the second Trump-Kim summit in Hanoi failed to produce an agreement on denuclearization, and the U.S. seized a North Korean cargo ship for violating international sanctions.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is dealing with yet another crisis. First, it was massive civil unrest, then Ebola, now measles. Carl Jansen leads Doctors Without Borders in that country. He joins us from Kinshasa. Carl, tell us about the state of the outbreak there.
So far, we have only in 2019 already had 1,500 children who died from measles. And the epidemic is now everywhere, from the Kinshasa, the capital, all the way to the far northeast of the country, south, it's everywhere.
Why is it so hard to control?
Well, the last time we have seen this kind of mortality rates, this amount of dead children, dates back from the year 2011, 2012, is due to a very low vaccination coverage. And that in itself is then linked to the lack of routine vaccination, the fact that there is problems with the cold chain, the logistics, the means of the health centers to maintain a cold chain in which these vaccines have to be stored. Of course, it's a country with displacement, with conflict, and that all adds up to a very low vaccination coverage, and then in a year like this leads to this kind of epidemic.
How is this compounding the other issues that this country is facing?
Well, yeah, it adds up, huh? There is Ebola in the east of the country. Our teams have dealt with cholera several cholera outbreaks in 2018. Have reacted on ethnic violence, and this is, as I said, it's the biggest measles epidemic that we have seen in the last decennium, and very worrying because there are much more means and much more resources that have to go into fighting back this epidemic.
Like what?
It's teams on the ground. It's vaccines. It's making sure that parents can access free healthcare. The financial barriers, even if very small, create a context in which parents seek care for their children too late or at a very late stage. So more teams that are involved in taking care of the children that are sick. And as I said, vaccination as well. And then, of course, in the longer term, making sure that there is a steady, stable, routine vaccination going on in the different parts of this country.
Is the government functional enough to help respond to these efforts, or is it left up to groups like yours?
Well, we are working here in collaboration with the Ministry of Health. So it's a collaboration, but there is more needed. The amplitude of this epidemic needs more resources. Needs more vaccines as well. We are getting close to the rupture of our stocks of vaccines, so we have to see more vaccines being allowed to arrive in the country to make sure that we can keep on vaccinating.
Doctors Without Borders mission head Carl Janssen. Thanks, Carl. Be safe.
Thank you.
New efforts by the U.S. to ease unrest unfolding in Sudan. Christina Ruffini covers the State Department for CBS. Christina, let's start with what's going on there.
After about 3 months of protests, the president, Omar al-Bashir, was overthrown in April. And since then, there has been this back and forth between protesters and the Transitional Military Council. Protesters have been pushing for more democracy. They want more representation in whatever government takes over. The Military Council had been in talks with them until a couple weeks ago. There had been this sit-in outside the military headquarters in Khartoum, and it had been fairly peaceful. But as we've seen in so many other countries, they don't always end that way. And a couple weeks ago, the protests were raided. There was a very violent crackdown. A lot of people were killed, and the violence in the country has escalated since then with attacks on protesters and demonstrators. People are starting to fear that it could become the next Yemen or Syria if something is not done quickly.
The African Union is working on finding a peaceful solution to this. So is the U.S. What kind of diplomacy is the Trump administration involved in there?
The State Department announced that they have appointed a special envoy to Sudan. They have that for a couple countries. They have one for Venezuela. They have one for Syria. So it's Ambassador Donald Booth. He's very experienced in the region. He serves as ambassador, chief of mission to places like Ethiopia, Zambia, Liberia. So this is really a signal from the U.S. that they are taking this crisis more seriously. They've got a point person. They've got somebody on the case, and they're going to start to dig into it.
CBS News State Department reporter Christina Ruffini, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a Hidden Figures landmark.
NASA formally recognized these women by naming the 300 block of East Street Southwest in front of NASA headquarters Hidden Figures Way.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is terrifying.
This is really a whodunit.
This is the moment of truth.
This is 48 Hours.
This is a senseless murder.
This case reads like a movie script. It's just more like a horror movie.
This is real life drama.
This is crazy.
I'm the only person alive that has ever walked out of his own grave.
This is how we make a difference.
This is real.
If it wasn't for 48 Hours, there would have been a funeral.
This is 48 Hours. Download the podcast at cbsaudio.com.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
This weekend on 48 Hours, whistleblower host Alex Ferrer has the story about a kickback scheme at an Alabama funeral facility. Alex joins us from New York. Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
So tell us about Barry Tall and how he helped bring down this scheme.
Barry's a unique guy. He at the age of 10, he decided he wanted to be a funeral director. He had been at his grandfather's funeral, and he saw how the funeral director was going around comforting everybody, and he liked the idea of being that guy. And at 14, when career day came around, he announced that's what he wanted to do, and he goes on to actually live that dream. He wanted to be a funeral director, became a funeral director, and it's all he's ever wanted to do. And then he comes across his boss talking to a couple people, directors of the Alabama Organ Center, about kickbacks, where he was supposedly overbilling. They were approving the overbilling and having government taxpayer money paid to him. And then he would kick back some of it to them for passing through his phony billings. And once his boss realizes that he knows this, Barry's life just turns around. I mean, he is physically assaulted. He is verbally attacked. He is threatened that he and his family, that his boss is going to kill him and his family. He's threatened that he's going to be cremated alive, which is not so far-fetched when you realize he works at a crematorium.
Can you explain how the scheme really worked?
Yeah, so what happens is the funeral home that was owned by his boss, called A. Banks Mortuary and Crematorium, entered into a contract with the Alabama Organ Center where basically anybody who was donating, not the organs, because the organs have to be removed actually within a short period of time from death, but tissue can be removed within a longer period. I don't know if it's 12 or 24 hours. Anybody who was a tissue donor, their bodies would be brought to A. Banks, and then the people from the Alabama Organ Center would come in and harvest the tissues, and then A. Banks would go ahead and prepare the body for the funeral home of the family's choosing. So they had a contractual arrangement where they would be paid by the Alabama Organ Center, and that's where the kickback scheme originated. Instead of billing what was actually done, he would overbill. According to Barry, he would way overbill to the tune of millions of dollars. And the directors at the Organ Center were being paid kickbacks by him to pass the bills through so that the government would pay them.
Whistleblower host Alex Ferreira on this multi-million dollar scheme on the Weekend Roundup. You can catch Whistleblower on Friday nights on CBS TV. Or if you miss it, you can stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks again, Alex.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been a wild week in the world of sports.
Morgan, shot, go!
The number one ranked U.S. women's national soccer team broke a World Cup record in their 13-0 blowout victory against Thailand. In the NHL, the St. Louis Blues upset the Boston Bruins to win their first Stanley Cup.
Coming from the worst team to the best team, this is amazing. Love this city.
Plus another historic win for the Toronto Raptors and their fans. The team swept two-time reigning champs, the Golden State Warriors, winning its first NBA championship. Now to a lasting tribute in Washington to the hidden legacy of some NASA pioneers.
Math is always dependable.
America's triumph in the space race was made possible by people the country didn't see. Women, many of them African American, hired by NASA to hand calculate propulsion, lift, thrust, and trajectory. Among them, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson. Margot Lee Shetterly's book, Hidden Figures, inspired the Oscar-nominated film.
It's the story of a group of women who were given a chance and who performed and who opened doors for the women who came behind them.
In 1969, Johnson helped the Apollo mission land on the moon. In 2016, she told our Jan Crawford she got the courage from her father's motto.
You're as good as anybody here.
And you took that to heart.
Yeah.
Wednesday, NASA formally recognized these women by naming the 300 block of East Street Southwest in front of NASA headquarters Hidden Figures Way.
Most of all, Hidden Figures is about taking off our blinders and recognizing the contributions of the unseen individuals.
Joylet Heilick is Johnson's oldest daughter.
She always, I think, looked beyond any adversity that she came upon for the goal of seeking a solution to a problem.
Michelle Miller reporting. Take a listen to this. This could be the first known audio recording of artist Frida Kahlo, according to researchers at Mexico's National Sound Library. The 90-second clip is from a 1950s pilot episode of a Mexican radio program of a woman describing Kahlo's former husband and painting partner, Diego Rivera. The woman's identity is still awaiting confirmation. A breakthrough for a little boy with the help of a chart-topping hit. Correspondent David Begno explains.
It was dinner time at the Brundage home in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. Four-year-old Daniel was doing what he always does, playing with the buttons on his mother's Shaletta's shirt.
I thought I heard him humming the song, and I was like, did I smoke crack earlier today? Or is this boy humming the tune to Old Town Road?
Old Town Road.
She was shocked because Daniel has autism and is mostly nonverbal.
I mean, it took us 6 months to teach him the letter A. And it was just like he'd been singing them all his life. And I thought, oh my God, it's music. That's how we reach him.
Old Town Road, which is sung by Lil Nas X, has been number one on the Hot 100 charts for the last 10 weeks. Shaletta tweeted her 10 seconds of joy. And Lil Nas X retweeted the video, writing, "What a king." Shaletta, finish this sentence for me. For me, this is...
a blessing, a miracle, an answered prayer. It wasn't just a moment, it was the moment. The sky's the limit from here.
David Begno reporting. Finally this weekend, the nation's first African-American priest, once a slave, is a step closer to sainthood.
Pope Francis has positioned the Reverend Augustine Tolton for sainthood. Tolton was born into slavery in Missouri in 1854. His mother and two siblings escaped across the Mississippi River to Quincy, Illinois, as Confederate soldiers shot at them in 1862. He studied for the priesthood in Rome, since no American seminary would accept a black man. He returned to Illinois to minister to the needy upon his ordination at the age of 31. Catholic Church leaders are looking for possible miracles attributed to Tolton, which could lead to his canonization. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. John Whitley is the technical supervisor. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.